Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, we are going to have some talk about the cause, because when we know the cause, we know why we're the ones that are experiencing it, and then we're the ones that are in control of shifting to have the cause that we want. So remember, if you have had challenging times, just write yes, 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 because I want to make sure that we're in the right place at the right time with the right people. And I'm jumping, you know, I want you to notice my friend Peter. When you see what Peter, check you out. Look at you smiling over there. So let me introduce Peter James, the PhD of success.
I like that. That's a new moniker there. You
like
actually use that.
I like that.
Hey, folks. Good morning. My name is Dr. Peter A. James. I am the high performance coach, helping you to realize your potential, whether it's yourself or your business. What is your way to get to the next level? I'm excited to dive back into conversation with my friends and colleagues here on the panel. We're going to be talking about some juicy stuff, as Kagan just mentioned here, diving into the organized.
Goodbye.
World. I see we have some people participating right now from Australia, United States, so that's really, really cool. I just wanted to say that first and foremost. But my name is Michael Baptiste. I'm a certified entrepreneurship and business coach, co-founder of a product called Banana Wave Banana Milk, founder of a program called High Ticket Freedom, which is an online digital marketing education company. And what we do is we help experts convert their ideas and their knowledge into online products and programs so they can create freedom their way. And I'm also a former professional basketball player overseas, which is quite interesting. But without diving too deep, you know, one of the things that I want to talk about and I'm going to be bringing up today in the topic of organized planning is a quote that really resonates with me. And this is something that I was fortunate that I was introduced to the entire Think and Grow Rich philosophy by Ms. Ann McNeil when I was a college student. I think it was about 10 years ago. And not only did she change my life, but this book is something that I've literally adopted into who I am. I read this book about, this is my 22nd time now, and I'm going to keep reading it just so, you know, a little hint. If you're watching this, read the book. But the quote that really resonates with me and that I'm going to touch on today is, a quitter never wins and a winner never quits. So when organizing and putting together your plans, it's important to, you know, see it through. And if it doesn't work out this way that you may imagine it, find another way. Maybe you can go to the left. Maybe you can go to the right. Maybe you can go above it. Maybe you can go underneath it. Maybe you can like smash through it. There is a way. It's just about you not quitting, and that's how you can win. And that's what I'll be discussing today. So with that, I will turn it over.
I have a question. Kagan, tell us more about you before we dive into this.
Well, I can't go from where I am without my friend Ann McNeil saying, you know, having her voice. You see, so who am I? I'm the woman that met this woman wearing red, and she had this gray hair, and she was at this convention where I was at twice in a year. She was at this convention. First one, she was there with her red and black, walking around, and smiling and giving some insight. The second convention that I went to was the Women's Economic Development Conference. And there she was, not only was she standing there herself, but she had like these 14 other people with their names on swarming her and saying, where do I go, where do I go? And she went, volunteer. And they all went, and they volunteered at all these doors. And I'm saying, who is this lady? And then I met Ann McNeil. So I'm going to just, can I just share my, that's who I am, is that I get Ann. So Ann, who are you, Master Builder? Welcome to this family of us.
Oh, my goodness. Listen, you know, all of that is great, and my response is to God be the glory, but I want to get to the story. So if all of you don't mind, I would like for us to revisit Michael and have Michael revisit the story from last week, Saturday, and let's pick up the story about the struggle and how when he was home in bed as a black man, just doing nothing but sleep with his family, all of a sudden there was not a knock at the door. The door was knocked in. And so for all of you that's listening about how do you overcome during a time of a crisis or struggle, regardless of what kind of struggle you are going through, that's what this show is about. That's what each of us are about. And using the principles of this book to make the point, to tell the story, but not just to tell the story, to live through the challenging times as we live in the principles. And for me, 1979, I picked up this book, December 31st, 9 p.m. Yes, that's my story. And the book has helped me through all kinds of challenges. But what we want to do today is for each of us in sharing our challenge, more importantly, sharing our story of overcoming the challenge by using the positive mental attitude, the faith, the desire, and all of the principles of success. So I'm going to rewind, and we're going to go back a little bit. And, Michael, you're going to come back and pick that story up. Then we're going to go to Galen and Peter so they can pick up their story from last week. And the ladies, with Ursula's leadership, we are going to be their cheerleaders. So, Michael.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, you know, ladies and gentlemen, for everyone watching all over the world, again, we have right now we have participants from Jamaica, Australia, the USA, maybe even Thailand, people from all over the world. This is excellent. I just wanted to share that first. So I'll, you know, begin and just touch on my story. So there was an experience that I had where I was a college student playing basketball, first one to make it out of the hood in my family. And I think I'm doing all the right things because I'm playing basketball, I'm studying, you know, I'm actually like, you know, listening to what my mentors tell me to do. I'm like writing goals and affirmations and all these things. And I'm thinking that I'm on the right path. And I go home for summer break because college was out. So, you know, all the students have to move out of the dorms. I go back home to the ghetto, to the projects where, you know, I didn't want to go back to. I knew it was a nightmare going back home. And not because of, like, my family, I love my family. My family is awesome. And I want to get that clear. My mother's awesome. But just the environment, the hostility of, you know, you got crackheads live down the street over there. You got, like, drugs dealing over there. It's a reality for a lot of communities that, you know, communities of color. It's just a reality. There's nothing we can do. So I go home, 3 weeks go by, and one night I'm sleeping, you know, just thinking of, you know, going to work out the next day to stay in shape for basketball season. And, you know, it's a loud boom, 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 just bamming on the door. And out of nowhere, literally, like, our door gets kicked in. You know, the SWAT team comes in. They've got rifles and weapons. And I'm telling it much better because I've said it already. So, you know, I'm gonna hold it together this time. But because normally this is a very painful story to tell because it literally caused me to take the actions that I took that I'll share with you in a moment. But just to get back to the story. I wake up in the morning, they kick in the door, I go to look at what's happening. Next thing you know, I look down at my chest and there's like laser dots on my chest and there's like guys, you know, fully armed, covered from head to toe with body armor. They got rifles and they're pointing at me. And I'm like, okay, I don't want to die. So let me just put my hands up and lay down on the ground. Lay down, officers put the knee on my neck, on my back, and you know, they just hold me down, yell at me, curse at me, and I'm like, what is going on? Like, please just don't let me die today. Like if I got to go to jail for whatever it is, I'll do my time. I'll serve it. But I don't think I should die right now. Like I thought I was doing everything right. Like why am I in this position where I'm about to be murdered execution style? Right. Cause they're on my back, but they got like the rifles pointed at me. And so, they snatched me off the ground, yell at me, you know, dropping the N-bomb and cursing and whatnot, take me outside. And, as we're outside, you know, it's, you know, the SWAT team, there's Miami Police Department, there's all these agencies, right? And they put me on the floor, and, you know, my mom's on the other side screaming for them not to kill me. It was very painful to listen to. It was probably one of the worst pains to, like, sit there and listen to your mother, like, screaming and begging someone not to execute her son, you know. No mother should have to go through that. And so they come back over, and they put a paper next to my face, and they say, oh. And then they walk away, and I'm like, wait, what's going on? Like, why did they put the paper next? And then I look at the paper as they were next to me, and I saw whose face it was, and I'm like, oh, that's not me. That's not fair. That's not fair. Like that's not fair. Like, I thought I was doing everything right because they told me as a black man, oh, you're not going to be nothing. You're going to be, you know, you're going to go to jail. You're going to sell drugs. Like, you're going to be a, like, that's like the reality they paint for me as a black man. So I say, if I do everything right and just play basketball and get my education, maybe I'll be immune to like that systematic racism, right? If I just do the right thing. But no, I'm sitting here handcuffed, you know, against my will for something I didn't commit because I'm the wrong guy, right? They confused me for somebody, for another black man. A couple minutes later, they come back and put another same paper next to my face with different officers, and they're like, ooh, and then they walk up and go talk. A couple hours pass by, just sitting on the ground, and they come back and they say, sorry, like, you know, wrong person, sorry about that, and they just drive off. And it was something that, you know, not only did it break my spirit, not only did it, you know, well, at the time, it broke part of my spirit, but it broke, you know, my family. Like, it caused a lot of trauma to my family members. It caused a lot of trauma to myself, to the point where, you know, I couldn't sleep. Like that night, I remember that was the thing that sparked me not, you know, having bad sleeping patterns for, you know, years. I had to go to therapy. I had to do counseling. Like, I had to, like, you know, just figure out how to heal. And I realized something, you know, if something like this is possible for me as a young black man trying to do something positive for the world, to where they can just say, hey, we thought you were somebody else, so we can barge in with the guns ready to take you down because we want to and you can't do anything about it. It just made me realize, like, okay, you know what? I'd much rather like to, you know, travel and see if there's somewhere else in the world where I can actually like survive and do good for the world as a black man and not have to worry about, you know, the police or systematic racism coming to just murder me just because that's the system we're up against. So that's my story. That event led me to wanting to travel the world, but I will say that since I did that, it forced me to become my own man. It forced me to, you know, to tap into myself, to go within. It forced me to do things like plan properly for, you know, months, budgeting. It forced me to just grow as a person. So even though it was one of the most traumatic experiences I ever had in my entire life, there were a lot of benefits that came from it. And in the book, Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill says, every failure or, you know, I say every negative thing, but every failure comes with the seed of an equivalent benefit. So I looked at it like, okay, you know what, this happened, but you know what I can do? I can take this opportunity to really grow something, build something, and inspire more people to see, hey, look, there's other options in the world. Like, there are solutions to this. We just have to think outside the box to solve the problems we're up against. So that's my story. That's how I've experienced it, and I've been trying to do my best to help solve what's happening in the world. But without dragging my story on any longer, I just wanted to come to you, just be real with you, let you know where I'm at, what happened to me, and hopefully this helps somebody else who's dealing with some challenging times right now.
And that's what this show is about today. Before I ask Gillen to join in on this, I want to tell you about a story that I participated in. There was a person here in Tampa that just passed away. And I've known him at a distance from college. And he was the poet. He was an activist. He was the first person to be an assistant to the mayor. And everybody knew him because he also went around and captured stories of individuals. He recorded them. He had the history of Tampa in his hands. And then he made change happen as well. So when I was interviewing him, he started talking about the black man's struggle. And I've heard that story so many times. I had heard that term used so many times, but I never really felt it until I heard him say it. And what he said was, everywhere the black man turns, he has to struggle. He has to struggle for respect of even his own family because the world is telling them that he's not worth anything. He has to struggle to have a decent job. He has to struggle to be somebody to look up to in his own children's eyes. And then he has to struggle to live because every time he walks out the door, something happens. Even if it's only his own fear that every time a policeman goes by or every time someone that is waving the wrong flag goes by,
there's that fear. And when you have children, you have sons especially, it's a difficult time according to how he made me feel about that moment. And so when I think about that, and I know that we have with us some dynamite men, okay, we think you hung the moon, okay, because y'all so calm and cool and collected and everything always work out just right. But you got two generations right now. He has been through something, Michael, that is. And you have been through something. Time to talk about it. How did you survive from his point to your point? What are the things that kept you going?
So for me, it's always interesting because I often have this conversation because people talk about how calm I tend to be in situations that might suggest for something other than calm. And there's another book that I've read for a really, really long time that talks about something about all things are going to work out for my good in the end, that no matter what, all things are going to work out for my good as long as I do what I'm supposed to do, and that is to love God and make sure that I'm doing what's according to his plan for me. So I base everything on that. That's like a contract. And if at the end of this life, all things don't work out for my good, I got a complaint, right? I got an issue. And I'm going to take that up with the person who wrote this contract because I didn't write those words. Someone else wrote those words, and I just signed, said, all right, cool, I'll do that. And so that's the way that I look at almost everything, that I might not understand it while I'm in it. It might feel terrible while I'm in it. I would rather not go through it. But somebody said that this too is going to work out for my good, so I'm gonna hold him accountable to that. So that's kind of the backdrop for everything that I try to do and I try to remind myself of. Michael did a great job of looking for the pearl of wisdom through his experience, which I can't imagine. I absolutely did not go through. I know of people who have been through something similar, but even they didn't go through what he just described. I too see that as a failure in the contract that everyone has signed in America. The contract in America says that if you work really hard, if you obey the laws, if you go to school, if you get an education, then you too can have a share of this thing called the American dream. I'm going to hold America to that contract. I didn't write that. Those aren't my words. That's the contract that they've created. And time again, we see where black men in particular, black women similarly, maybe not to the exact same level, but similarly, we are being shortchanged on what we're supposed to be getting from this contract. We get the education, we do the right things, we obey the laws, we turn the other cheek, we do all the things that's on our end of the contract, but yet we don't get what we are supposed to receive, which is the American dream. So I take a longer view on my life. I get confidence from this book in that the thing that we are experiencing now was literally written about in 1937, right? So the things that we're seeing now, the reason that the world isn't working right now is literally explained on page 112 and 113 of this book, right? You know, as I said earlier, every success and every failure begins and ends with leadership. The reason this isn't working is because there is an absence of leadership.
All right, Mr. Leadership, I promised you something. Galen, I promised you, and Michael, I promised you something. And Galen, I promised that I was going to press you. You said something in your, and everybody knows that I love Galen.
I'm sorry. I just came off mute. I just came off mute because I just sent you a, message up the again. I just sent you a message in the chat. So Galen, we're all going to gang up on you.
We are so here's the thing, Galen. You know, I get that and America is good. Then we could all sing the song. But here's the bottom line is Michael needs to know. Michael's just starting his career. Remember I told you earlier, I said, Galen, I know where you are today. What I need to know, what Michael needs to know, what everybody watching is, how did you manage? Because you have been in corporate America. You've been a leader in corporate America. You did this. There were times that you were the only guy who happened to be of color walking into a room. You were the only one that walked into the cafeteria, and God forbid, you and Michael and Peter sat down on a and had some lunch. And you were having a meeting, and a bunch of other guys who did not look at you came into that room, and they wouldn't sit with you, and they would say to you, Galen,
break it up.
So let's just go. Come on, tell me the truth. Like, I'm not letting you get out of this.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing for me to get out of. I mean, that's very real.
How did he handle it?
Yeah. I don't know. This sounds made up. This sounds false. But again, I just keep my eye on the long view. It's like this. My success, my performance has absolutely nothing to do with my employer. It really doesn't. My success, my performance has nothing to do with my parent. It has nothing to do, actually, how I'm going to behave in a situation with the police actually has nothing to do with the police. No one can make me do anything. I just can't.
Okay, with that.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and I get exactly what you're saying, and I know that is true for every single one of us, and that's why we're hosting this show, because what we're exemplifying is the fact that you are in control of your will and your way. You're not in control of other people and how they treat, going back to the golden rule and all of the biblical principles that we learn. Nevertheless, it does not negate, come on now, everybody. I mean, I don't talk about it, but I had a gun pulled on me with a car full of kids at a red stop, at a red light in Miami on my way to a parade because I wanted to turn right to go to the parade. And the police walked up with a gun, pulled it out, pointed to me, kids in the car. But my point is not about that. It is how we choose to respond. And for the mere fact that we have the good book principles that this book is written about, and when you really digest the Think and Grow Rich principles, they're all based upon the book of the Bible, right? But what we're talking about today is point, story. Has there ever been an experience in your life, Galen and Peter, because we're here to support Michael and other, it's not just Michael, but there are a lot of millennials like Michael that are looking to guys. They're not looking to the women. They're not looking to us. They're looking to those of you that look like them that have gone before them to understand, yes, this happened to me, and this is how I responded. Now, maybe, Galen, you might be a part of that 1% that nothing has ever happened to you or your father or your brother or any black man that's close to you that you can relate to and experience. So we'll give you a moment to hold that, and I'm not sure if Fakine is raising her hand. Yeah. Maybe we'll go to Peter if you need a moment, but if not, we'll just continue the conversation.
No. Let me talk to that, and then I'm going to throw it to Peter. So Peter can back clean up. I can't say that I've ever been in an experience where a gun's been pulled on me or anything like that. But yeah, you can't be in corporate America and have any level of success where you're not faced with those side eyes, and you're not faced with that level of I'm going to call it disrespect, right? Where you are always asked to be above the fray and have this higher standard than everyone around you. So that certainly has happened time and time again. You know, I've even had conversations as late as 2 weeks ago where some people that were part of an interviewing panel that I was interviewing for a job finally told me, yeah, that job that you were going for 5 years ago, you were the best candidate, but the hiring manager chose someone else for these other reasons, right?
Well, what are the reasons? Because you were not qualified? No.
The reasons were because the candidate that was chosen, his wife was the home decorator for the hiring manager, and they had personal relationships, and they went out to dinner.
But it was not because you were black. I want to go there because, again.
Ann and I have decided that we are going to push Galen. Peter gets scared because we're going to do this. Galen, I need a story.
Yeah.
Tell me a story. When you went in, tell me how you handled, because this is really true, because Michael's going in business meetings. He really is, and he's going into corporate meetings. How do you handle when you are in a meeting and you know you get that? There's an emotional state that occurs when somebody looks at you. Now, obviously, I'm not black, but I know when I've been in the room and I'm the only woman and I walk in and I go to sit at the head of the table, I know the look.
Not just a woman, but you're also a Hispanic woman.
Oh, and I definitely know that. But
okay.
I know that look. I know when that. So I need to know how. Tell me a story where you went in going to a meeting, you got the look, how you felt, and how you quickly shifted.
Okay, I'll tell you a story that happened actually last week.
Excellent.
Last week, I'm at a board meeting for a nonprofit organization. And I'm actually on the governance committee, so we're actually choosing the people that will be on the board and how the board works. And we have frequently talked about how there aren't very many African Americans on the board. There's 61 members on the board. 4 of them are non-Caucasian. I believe I'm the only black person on the board. And so I raise a candidate, one of my friends, highly successful. And when I raise my candidate, all of a sudden there's this big discussion around whether or not my candidate is capable of fulfilling the financial commitment of being on the board. That conversation has never come up before with any other candidate. And once we end that conversation, we move on to 2 other candidates who aren't African Americans, and then all of a sudden they're green-lighted, right? And so I take that as, I bring that up. But rather than letting letting my anger be on display because they got the message, I went back to that person and said, hey, wait a second, that seems to be inconsistent with what we talked about earlier. And I pressed them several times to see the hypocrisy. So I guess the whole point behind how I handle this, because this is what you guys are getting at, how do I handle this? All of this stuff is hypocrisy. And the way I handle it is I highlight and have them see the hypocrisy, how what they're doing, what they're saying to me, how they're treating me in the cafeteria is inconsistent with what they said that this company is about, what they said this organization is about. So it's not about me. It's like either we're going to play by the rules that you've written or we're going to change the rules, but the two can't stand. And I found that tends to incite people more than if I say, why are you doing this to me? Is this because I'm black? It's what are we doing here? So that's the same thing with America. Okay, America, this is what you said you're about. Either these are the rules or they aren't.
So, Galen, what I hear you saying is that in public, you have this smile and you keep everything calm. But then you hem them up in the corner after the show.
You make sure
they know what's up. Okay, so we get it. And I'm come to your defense a little bit because I get what you're saying in that when you're in the moment, you're not going to be provoked. but you will deal with it.
Something that my dad shared with me a long, long time ago is that someone might be able to beat you, but they're going to be too tired to brag about it, and you leave scratch marks. So I may lose that battle at the moment and suffer that indignation at the moment, but they're gonna realize who they're dealing with. And I didn't create that. They did.
I had a moment like that took years, though. When I first started with the company, I was outside of the copier room, and two white guys were in there changing the toner. And I heard one say, well, why don't you let Ursula change it? Then it won't make a difference.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was new, and a whole bunch of other things said that this was not the moment that I would go up against this person that's been a long-term employee in good with other folks. I didn't do a thing. But I must tell you that years later, that same person, and I will never forget his name, and I'm tempted to say it now, but I know better. So he ended up, and I remember this, I'm sitting at my desk in management, and he walks in as my new employee begging to go to his son's or grandson's soccer game. I said, how profound is this?
No, both
so that karma comes back to you.
But I will say that both Ursula and Galen, you know, when I'm looking at organized planning and Think and Grow Rich, and I'm reading this, you, Galen, just shared some of your story. And I think that I just want to read a statement from this particular area, at page 123, where it says, behind it all, there was a cause. Nothing ever happens without a cause. In the main, the cause here is traceable directly to the, in this case, the economic habit of trying to reap without sowing. And this is where we really resonated with what you just said. To show what we are, where we are, and what we are because of our own conduct. If there is a principle or cause and effect which controls business, finance, transportation, the world, the same principle controls individuals and determines their economic status. And I don't know that people really understand how amazing Galen is. So Galen is one of the leaders in the coaching industry worldwide. Galen owns a franchise. Galen's been the head in some major corporations. And so what we're experiencing is, while this stuff was happening, Galen was living this life of we are because of our own conduct, and we're not responsible for anything. So I really thank you, Galen, for letting me and press you, because we're not giving up on you yet, but being able to share that truth, because you're embodying what we're talking about for Michael and for anybody that's listening. So I appreciate that. And Ursula, can I just pick on Peter for a minute?
Oh, sure.
Right after he does the 13th step.
Yeah.
You go for it, Peter.
That's exactly what I was getting ready to do, yes. For those of you who are not familiar, again, with the Think and Grow Rich text by Napoleon Hill, he talks about 13 principles that are needed in order to accomplish your dreams and your visions. So I'm going to read each of those, beginning with number one, desire, which is the starting point of all achievement. Number two is faith, visualization and belief in the attainment of desire. Number three is auto-suggestion, the medium for influencing the subconscious mind. Number four, specialized knowledge, personal experiences or observations in your life. Then there's imagination, the workshop of the mind. You need to have some type of imagination. Today, we're going over organized planning, which is the crystallization of desire into action. Then there's decision, the mastery of procrastination. Number eight is persistence, the sustained effort necessary to induce faith. Then there's nine, the power of the mastermind, which I love so much, the driving force to success. Number 10 is the mystery of sex transmutations. And you know sex sells, but it's in a little bit of a different light, as Napoleon Hill has put it. Number 11 is the subconscious mind, the connecting link of all of these. Number 12 is the brain, the broadcasting and receiving station for thought. And last but not least is the sixth sense, which is the door to the temple of wisdom. Please dive into this text if you have not already. So much comes out of it, which is why we use it as the backdrop.
Now your story.
Now my story. So, you know, we all have stories.
Or your hair.
And my hair, yeah. I got a new hairdo, and I was told about that before the show. So I won't go into it. Well, that's not my story, though. So, you know, I was raised by a single mom in New York City. And she, one of the things that she tried to instill in me was determination, education, which was the key to success. And from her, one of the things that she underlying subconsciously put into me was maintain your poise. So why do I bring that up? I have never been through anything as Michael has described. However, I have been arrested. I have been singled out. I have been called the N-word. My mom made it a point to put me in a lot of schools where I was the only black face because she wanted better for me, or so she thought. And as a result of being put in these environments, yes, there's a level of stress that comes with wearing this skin. And it's funny because in this last week, I've been having a lot of organizations and individuals who want to come to me and ask for facilitation or training around anti-racism initiatives or systemic injustices as well. And I've been, during the conversations, one of the things that I'm now more and more addressing is this stress. And for those who, like Galen, have been in the corporate environment, there's a level of stress, and I'm going to go into detail about what it is, that African-American males, females, carry with them in the workplace that we don't think of on a regular basis, but it becomes so commonplace. And those of you who know about stress, there's a lot of negative effects of stress, physically, mentally, psychologically, right? But let me just go into detail about it. And then on the other side, I'm going to talk about overcoming them, right? How I've managed to overcome them, even getting to the point where I am right now as well. So number one, I think about me in the corporate workplace from day one. I knew that I was the runway. I had to set the runway for people of color behind me, meaning that everything that I do, I need to prepare for whoever is coming back behind me. Number two, I had to outwork everybody around me primarily because of the color of my skin, not just because of my skill set, not just because of my abilities, but primarily because of the color of my skill. I had to build better relationships than everybody around me, where it was not as natural as many who did not possess this brown skin, where it was more natural for them. For me, it was not as natural because when you don't look like everybody else in the room, it's more challenging. You have to figure out ways to connect. Number four, how do I build generational wealth when I wasn't started with generational wealth? Actually, as a matter of fact, what was generational wealth? What is it? And so now even have to get into that for the benefit of my followers, for my next generations as well. I'm a big proponent. I love Maya Angelou's quote, "I am the hope and the dream of the slave." Literally. Some people say, "Hey, why do you work so hard and do what you do?" And I say, because my forefathers before me, when they didn't have this opportunity, I need to almost make up for what they didn't have the opportunity for, literally. That's stress in and of itself right there. The next one, I got to think about my next three moves when everybody's probably maybe just thinking about their next move. I'm literally planning and trying to figure out, okay, what do I do next? It's almost like a chessboard to a certain extent. Everyone's playing checkers. I need to play chess. Stress. I got to overthink my comments in the boardroom to make sure I'm not offending everybody or making sure I'm not making anyone feel uncomfortable, especially if I'm talking about hiring more African-Americans in the workplace. And then last but not least, family stress, as Michael even just described there, friends, relatives, brothers, sisters, sons and daughters who are now walking the streets of society with the same color of skin that I have, stress, while I'm at work. And last but not least, I think I've kind of encapsulated all of this, representing the entire race when I walk in the door, right? So you say, no, don't get me wrong, I know that other people, women, African-American and women as well, there's a level of stress that they have to carry also. But this stress that I'm describing right here is something I don't think about on a regular basis. But then how about this? How does it affect me physically over 20 years? How does it affect me psychologically with my relationships over 30 years? What does it do to a collective people when you're trying to get ahead and you have this stress every single day because you don't know what your next move is going to be? I was talking to a pastor friend of mine yesterday about being a Christian and being Black, and when a cop comes up to me, he doesn't see me as being a Christian first. He sees me as wearing the skin color first and all that comes with it, right? And again, I've had cousins who have been in incarcerated, and I've had friends who have been had trouble with the law for one reason or another. And I say this because at any corner, that stress is also with me because that could be me at any given minute. I could have very easily been Ahmaud Arbery. As many times as I've run down the street, very easily could have been on any day of the week. His killing resonated so much with me. The stress of that resonated so much with me. So, you know, I say all that to say this, you know, how do I overcome, how have I overcome all of this stuff? How do I continue to overcome, I think, is the biggest question. And I have to start out by saying, in the workplace, one of the things that I've always thought, especially in the latter part of my career, whether it was in the military or whether it was in corporate America or whether it was in higher education, academia, I've always thought that I was greater than my position or greater than the organization. Literally, I've had to think that because, you know, those of you who've been in corporate America, you know they see you as only your title. And now they see you as Black and your title. And so I've had to almost instill in myself with affirmations that I am greater than this position that I'm in. I'm also more than this organization. I'm greater, bigger than this organization. And I can be, right? And last but not least, this organized planning chapter, even before I even read it a whole lot, was plans, strategies, and these executions that I like to rest my life on. This organized planning, I realized even before I read this chapter that I've been planning for a long time. And I will be honest, those of you listening, my plans never go the way that I plan them. My strategies never go exactly how I plan. But I've learned over time to adapt, adjust, tweak, depending on what the universe provides me. And I think, listen, this plight of mine that I started out talking about as a African-American male in the workplace that carries this minority stress is not going away anytime soon. But how do I now rise above that in order to overcome the next hurdle, what's around this next corner? That's what
this is
so wonderful because when we opened the show, we talked about the black man's struggle, and you started talking about stress. That stress is that struggle. Now, I want to take it a little bit further. We talked about this before the show, but we're going there, okay? You got a new hairdo. and before we talk about it, I want to ask you a direct question in that I just saw something on Facebook where there's a doctor in scrubs, and right beside it, he has his picture in a hoodie, and he begs that people judge him the same as when he's in his scrubs, as when he's in his hoodie.
Yeah.
And from someone who wears a fro from the 70s, I had to get over the fact that people look at this as a militant hairdo. No, I just happen to like it, okay? What it says to you is what you think about what's going on around your world. But how are you going to handle the perception with your desire to be what you want to be and wear your hair the way you want to wear it?
Oh, it's funny. Whenever I teach, I always, especially like if I teach a leadership class or organizational behavior type class, when we start talking about perceptions, I always bring up how society perceives me when I have my shirt and my blazer on, or when I go into CVS pharmacy with my hoodie and my Tim's on. I'm definitely not treated the same way. And again, I got to go back to the stress and this color of my skin. So here I am now. I got twists in my hair. I've never had this long a hair for 20 years since I came out of the military almost. Very different for me, very uncomfortable with me. But here's why it's so different and uncomfortable for me. Because for so long I have been carrying the stress of what perception needs to be for my audience in corporate America, or maybe my audience for my clients, right? And so now I've been having to succumb to that. So COVID-19 has a little bit forced me to grow my hair out, and I've taken it to the next level. And so now I'm like, and maybe it's a little bit in light of what's going on in society. Now I am, maybe I'm
free.
Free. I'm spreading my wings, right? I'm spreading my wings a little bit. And, you know, I don't know if it's a little bit of that. I don't know if I'm just playing with these twists a little bit to see what happens after a time. Will my hair start falling out or something? I don't know what it is. But I'm almost letting that stress go to a certain extent, right? And it's interesting because I'm in uncharted territory with letting this stress go. So this minority stress that I'm talking to you guys about, after you carry it so long, you just get used to keeping it. You just get used to having it on your shoulders, right? Over time, decades. And so now it's a little bit different when you almost intentionally peeling off some of those layers.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Peter, one of the phrases that I seem to be using a lot that you reminded me of,
yeah,
is it's kind of a boxing analogy.
Yeah.
That fighters never get knocked out by the punch they see coming. You know, it's like, I can see it coming now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's like, now it's almost insulting my intelligence that you're going to try to do the exact same thing to me that you did last month. It's,
yeah,
like, I mean, it's almost, that is really what upsets me more, that you're not even trying to change up the way it looks. And it becomes my job, I believe, to find a more ingenious way to get around this punch that I see coming.
You gotta play chess, Dalen.
Exactly, exactly. Actually, that was one of the foundational, my dad taught both of my brother and my sister, he taught us how to play chess when we were 12 years old. Come to find out, my dad didn't know how to play chess. He was learning like three pages in the book, and then he'd come and teach us those three pages, and then eventually he stopped showing up and just started asking us questions. Okay, so what's the next thing? He had no idea what the next thing was. But this idea of playing chess has always been foundational to everything that I I wish I could take it off. I wish that I could just play checkers every now and then.
We wish we could peel it off and just be free. But you know what? And this statement right here is going to resonate. I don't know what it's like to peel it off.
I think this might even create another show, because for non-American blacks, we don't have that conversation. But for non-American blacks who live in a country where everybody looks like them, has a whole different mindset about being black and knowing who they are and self-worth. That's an entirely different show. That's an entirely different conversation, because when you are born in America, taught slavery is your history, there's no way you can ever know yourself. Even with the word of God saying that we have a higher vision, it's hard to sometimes get there when you're here. But what I want to do before we finish up the show is a couple of things.
So, and just yes. Before you go, because those, and I love you all so much. You blow my mind. I just want to jump in because, you know, so while my skin is white, my husband and children's skins are olive, and my son-in-law. And when Alex and Andrea, my daughter and son-in-law, have traveled, Alex speaks with a thick accent, Spanish accent. And when we went to Arizona, we were driving her to Fort Huachuca. She's a military intelligence officer. We were stopped at there are border patrol stations, and we were stopped, and they were fully armed. Our border patrol, this was going from one state to the other, and they stopped the car, and I was driving. They had us roll down the window. My husband was in the back seat. Andrea was in the passenger seat. And they said, speak. And so I spoke, and then Andrea spoke, and then David spoke. And we had to show our papers, and we had to prove where we were going. This is from one state to another. Andrea and Alex and my husband haven't stopped at gas stations. She serves our country. My son serves our country. They even stopped at gas stations and have been told to their face so many times, go back home. You don't belong here. Get out of here. And luckily, and those like my mates here know, luckily I stay in the car. My husband is much more like you and Galen and Peter. And they just know that they're naive and ignorant. And Andrea's thing is, you're welcome. And then that person gets, and you're welcome. I serve this country. I'm here. This is, and she's gotten it from both points, because both is she's Hispanic and she's Jewish. So we know that in the South she can't wear her Star of David. I'm not taking away, but I am saying that there is, as a parent, as a wife, you know, we thank you for going there. Thank you for going there. And thank you for blessing us. And thank you for helping us. And I'm sorry, I just had to jump in and say that here in America, it's a huge issue, right? Color, our ethnicity,
Well, there's something I'd like to say too. In the beginning, Michael said something that I don't want to get lost. In describing the story or your experience, you said something that I truly believe can put you in a position to impact the world today. And that is when you said, I'll do the time, just let me live. See, people have put themselves in a position of judge, jury, and execution all in one moment. And
And I think that is almost a rallying call. It's not about what the person did. It's about giving them an opportunity to live, to speak to it. And everyone deserves that chance. But you know how we are. We ride on words. And those words have a real nice ring to them. So I would suggest that you put them in something flowery and pretty, or however, or fierce and strong, whatever, and float those words out there. Because I think if people can begin to hear them every time the situation happens, it might save some lives. I do the time. Just let me live.
Wow. Wow. Tweet that. Tweet that. Tweet that. Tweet that. You know, we started the show talking about what do you do in challenging times. And being the first Black female contractor in our state, as we were all talking, I thought about my own self-reflection. What did I do in challenging times, being Black and a woman and disadvantaged in this area of construction? And people always say, well, it's a male-dominated industry. How do you focus on billion-dollar programs when I came from a place where I could not save $1,000 a year? And I will say that this book and the mindset shift for all of us, but it's not just about us and what we use and the principles. And again, and we've all talked about a particular portion of the book. And I'd just like to just read this. On page 129, it talks about, and this is something that happens for many of us when we think about being born into poverty. Unfavorable, it's actually on page 128. And it just basically says unfavorable environmental influence during childhood. As the twig is bent, so shall the tree grow. Most people who have criminal tendencies acquire them as a result of bad environment and improper associates during childhood. One of the things that Napoleon Hill has talked about as a part of his own life is that he was born in the hills of West Virginia, and how the influence of racism and many other things that happened during his day, he had a choice. We talked previously about the whole idea of the book entitled Think and Grow Rich, A Black Choice, which Napoleon Hill was writing before he passed. And he left in his will, his estate, that the book should be finished by none other than a Black author, but not to pay him a dime. Because he wanted him to have the experience of earning it. Now, I mentioned those two things to just say that these principles can take any of you wherever you want to go based upon starting where you are. But it all starts with a desire. And my desire, being first Black female contractor in the state of Florida, was to create an organization where Black women could come together and have the support that we needed to survive in this industry. For each one of us on this show today, we've elected to use the principles of this book to not just survive during challenging times, but to thrive during challenging times. And what we want to do is encourage you to think about what will you do, regardless of your situation, whether it's race, whether it's health, whether it's a crisis, one crisis or another, it really does not matter. And Galen spoke to it earlier. Your actions are really not, if you go inside, they're not determined by others. You get to choose every inch of the way. When Michael was faced with the situation that he was faced with, he could have decided, you know what, let me just throw it all away. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to actually go down the path that has been laid for me and what everybody said I would do. Same thing with Bikin. She did not have to come back after leaving the United States and make a life for herself. Peter has already demonstrated what his mom taught him. He's a living example for many Black men to follow. And Ursula, with her books and her writing, continues to tell not just the past, but setting the future. So what we want to do is, as we wrap up the show, I'm going to turn it back to Ursula. But I would like to just encourage all of you, join us every January with our annual meeting that we're hosting in Boca Raton at the Embassy Suites, and bring your life in writing. And what we basically do, and Laverne, will, if you could just pull up the information so that individuals, if they're interested, can go to our website at internationalmasterminders.com. But what we want to encourage you to do is think about what is your desire. What is it that you really want to do? How do you use these principles, regardless of your crisis, to have a better quality of life in every area of your life? So, Laverne, I'm not sure if you can expand that. If not, you can just take it down and just put up the website. But if you go to internationalmasterminders.com, you can join us every January and just bring your life in writing. And Ursula, I'll turn it back over to you.
What a wonderful show. And the mastermind is at work. Michael, there is someone in chat that said, I'll stand the trial or something like that, or I have to come back at it. But the point is, as opposed to assuming guilt, say, I'll go to trial, but just let me live. So you work those words out, you come up with something nice, and you will impact the world. And you now have the masterminds working with you. Okay?
Thank you.
So with that, oh, I just love my co-hosts and being a part of this team. And every week I go, pinch me, because they're such wonderful people. And we get to share our thoughts with you. And you make us better for listening, because it's you that we want to live up to the dreams and hopes and help guide and then follow, in some cases, what you're doing. That's what the show is about. We think and grow rich in every aspect of our lives, and you're a part of our lives. So come back next week. Take care.
Thank you.
Goodbye.